Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to Keeping It Real with Caroline and Sophie. We're delighted to be back in Caroline's kitchen.
Yay!
Thank you for listening.
Hey, it's so good to be back, and it's especially good to have the amazing Grace. Sophie and I were so blessed a while back to meet this extraordinary woman. We went to this wonderful empowerment event, and I will never forget. On stage came this absolutely beautiful, beautiful woman who then started speaking. And
you were blown away.
Yeah, but I, to the point of being speechless, I was so blown away by what Grace has been through and how she has so gracefully come to the other side of some of the most horrific experiences you could ever imagine. But not only that, how she has reclaimed her power, how she has built the most extraordinary life, and how she is giving back to community in the most remarkable way. It's you're one of the most inspiring women I think I've ever met, Gracie.
And we should also add that amazing Gracie is also an ambassador for the Prince's Trust, which is why she was at the foundation that we were at the night that we met her. And we are delighted to have you here today and really, really excited to have you share your incredibly empowering story, your journey from where you started to where you are today. And we hope that our lovely listeners will be as inspired as we were by you. So welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate all your kind words. Thank you.
So, should we start from the very beginning?
Exactly. Where were you born? When? How old are you?
Exactly.
We want the whole story.
Start from the very, very start.
So, I was born in East London. So, I'm an East London girl. And that was in 1986. So, I'm 32 now. And I was raised by my wonderful mother, Jane. And I grew up with my siblings at home, and she worked extremely hard as a single mother to give us the best life she possibly could.
So, how many siblings did you have? And so, where was your dad?
So my father lived with his other wife. So they separated when I was very young. However, they were still friends and they still communicated. So I would go and visit my father most weekends. But my father had Parkinson's disease. So as I grew up, he started to deteriorate, so it got worse as I got older. So it was quite difficult to form a relationship with him. But my mum is an extraordinary woman, you know, and at times they had their own difficulties, but she always said to me, you know, I want you to get to know the man and you can decide, you know, how you feel about your father, you know, which I think is extremely fair.
I love that. It's such a good attitude.
And I think even when the person you're with might not be the best role model or partner, you know, to have the support of your mother to allow you to build a relationship, whether it's going to be a good one or a bad one, is incredibly powerful and important, because two parents make one person. It's not just the one.
100%. I love the way you've said that, actually. I think that can be used as great inspiration, you know, to a lot of people. I wish I'd had a mother who said that to me.
Yeah, really important. And so that gave me the room to get to know my father, who was an extremely dignified man, considering what he was going through. You know, I mean, he was on a lot of medication to survive the Parkinson's disease. So a lot of the time when I would visit him, he was in and out of docile sleeps, and so, and I would help feed him because his hands were very shaky towards the end. So that became my normality, but I was very fortunate. You know, my father picked some extremely strong women. So his last wife, my stepmother, she took me and she knew me from about the age of two. So when I would go around there, you know, I would call her mum as well, really. And she really embraced us all, which is incredible, I think. You know, yeah. It's wonderful when women work together to raise children.
So she was a wonderful person to have in your life
exactly,
as well.
Exactly.
Oh, that's good. Not a wicked stepmother.
No.
A wonderful stepmother.
A wonderful stepmother.
That's very nice to hear.
And I think it's also really important for anybody out there who is a step-parent just to be aware of, I'm sure everybody is anyway, but it's something that certainly crosses my mind when I think about my future, is taking on another family comes with their own things going on within the family, their own dynamics, and just being really sensitive to those children's feelings. And, you know, you're taking half of their family away, and you know, I know certainly for my children, you know, with my ex-husband's new partner, sometimes they feel slightly insecure about, you know, how much time daddy spends with them. And, you know, even if it's not a serious girlfriend, it's always something that goes through their minds.
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, when if someone has children of their own and has a little bit of experience, you know, I think often if you get divorced relatively young, you know, there is a chance that, that, you know, the ex-husband might meet, like in Alex's case, someone who is a little bit younger and doesn't have children. And it's, you've really got to have that sensitivity, because yeah. It's difficult for both parts. It's difficult for the woman coming in, but it's also difficult for the children in many ways.
Exactly. Yeah. So full support all round on all sides for everybody. And, you know, I think the other thing is when your partner does get a new partner, you have to embrace all aspects of your new chapter. And if your partner gets a new partner, then you have to be on board for that and supportive and encourage the children to really embrace it as well, because you want them to feel happy and secure, whoever they're with, whether they're with you or your partner.
Exactly. And I think life is difficult enough as it is. You know, we all have enough challenges in our day-to-day lives. We don't need also to be challenged when we end up falling in love with someone. I think you're so right in saying embrace and support as much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. But back to you, Grace. Yes, what happened after you had... So you took very good care of your father with great support from his wife.
Exactly.
And did they have children together also?
Yeah. So my sister Janine, she's about 25 now. So, you know, it was difficult. And she would tell me stories, because we were very close, that he would sometimes take more medication in order to appear stronger for when we arrived. And to me, you know, when I look back on that, I think what a beautiful man in all of his suffering. You know, he really tried his best to still show up for us, which I think is incredible.
That is so sweet.
Yeah.
Wow. That is such a compromise.
Mm-hmm. So what happened next?
So he passed away when I was 15. He got cancer, but his body was obviously too weak to fight it.
Horrendous,
you know?
For you.
Yeah, it was very difficult. You know, even though as a child I always had this sense of awareness that unfortunately at some point he was going to pass away, you just think that he's going to be there forever, you know? Mm. And so when he passed away, that was very difficult. And I didn't really know how to deal with it. I was extremely angry, you know, and it really took me down a road of kind of, I started to drink quite heavily after his passing.
Mm-hmm. Aged 15?
Yes.
Oh my goodness, sweetheart. But how did you get in with the wrong crowd, or how did that happen?
I grew up in East London, and you know, at the time it was quite a rough area. And
which area?
In Hackney. I grew up in Hackney. Yeah. But I had a wonderful group of friends, actually. Mm. And my mother always really encouraged us to, you know, be involved in different activities and hobbies. So I danced from about the age of six, tap dance, contemporary jazz. So I was always actually active and doing things, you know. And I had a really beautiful circle of friends at the time, but you know, we lost our parents all at a very a year apart, so
there was a group of you that had been through the same
exactly
which in one way is supportive.
Yeah, so how come you all lost parents at the same time?
Illnesses, you know, and
gosh, that is so tough. I mean, I lost my mother when I was 11,
right? Wow.
And it was like such a, it was, not only was it obviously the most painful thing you can possibly experience, but it was also the shock of it, because no one had ever died before.
Right.
I had never had death close to me any time before or actually for many, many, many years after that.
Yes.
So it's a very lonely experience at the same time, being the one who has this experience with no one around you really understanding what it is you're going through.
Yeah. So we had this unspoken word, as much as we didn't really actively talk about it, because we were still too young, I think, in a sense, to kind of understand the emotions and the feelings. And I turned to alcohol quite early, really. And
when you say you turned to alcohol?
It seemed like fun at the time, and it was house parties, and it was the stuff teenagers did.
Which is still quite young for 15 house parties.
Yeah, it is quite young. But we kind of soon, it was, I suppose all of us at that time didn't, you know, I realised probably after, a while of drinking that actually this feels nice and this doesn't make me think or doesn't make me feel the pain. And and that's something that started to happen.
So I'm being numbed right now by what I'm drinking. But let me ask you a question. Did you not have a time that you had to be home every day? You know, did you not have, if you finished tap dancing at 6, you had to be home by 6:30? Was there not, a real eye being kept on you? And then beyond that, the affordability of drinking at that age, how can you afford that? And if you also are numbing feelings, you're also numbing control.
And, well, I guess having a working mother is also tough, because if your mother's at work all day and you're going to tap, she's kind of trusting you to make that journey home, and she probably didn't have any idea that you were drinking.
No, I don't think she had any idea of how much I was drinking at that time, and it was progressive. It wasn't that at 15 I was drinking loads of alcohol. It was, over time. And then throughout some more of the experiences that I went through, it was then that became my kind of default setting, that this is something that enables me to kind of get through life without having to really acknowledge what I have experienced or I'm going through.
So, did you even know at that point that alcohol had turned from something fun and an escapist moment of rebellion to something that you were then becoming reliant on to numb your inner pain?
I think no. It probably was only until I was probably about the age of 18, 19 when I was becoming aware that it was an issue.
So you started at 15 and by the age of 18 you were still drinking and what else? Everything else?
Yeah, I mean, I was using drugs by the time I was about 19 years old, 18 years old. My mum had amazing work ethic and so I did the same. It wasn't that we were just allowed to, if you want something, here's the money. You go and find a job and you get on with it. And so that's what I did from a young age. So I had lots of different jobs.
Lots of structure.
Yeah,
and lots
exactly.
Of support and lots of encouragement, but you had lots of inner pain.
Yes, basically. Yeah. Correct.
So what happened at that moment in your life? So you're 18, you're unfortunately in a position where you're having access to drugs, alcohol, and you're having a good time or you're not having a good time?
Well, difficult, because at the age of 17, so after my father passed away, I was extremely vulnerable, and yearning for a father figure. Yeah. And I didn't have, although I had a father that was there, I didn't have a father figure in the sense of somebody that takes you to the park or, I have one picture of us actually together when I'm about probably 1 year old where he is walking in the park with me. But my memories of a father is of a very sick man, So I craved and yearned for that.
Yeah.
And so, I'm a big believer in kind of what, energy and what I was putting out there at that age was kind of a yearning for somebody to come and kind of be a dad to me. And yes. And so that can happen. I was very vulnerable. And so I met somebody at the age of 17, which,
How old was he?
He is, I can't really remember his age, but I mean, he's years older than me, over 10 years older than me. So that turned into quite a difficult and very dangerous situation, I was I believe and I know that I was groomed and you know, I felt like this person was a bit of a father figure in a sense.
Are you in love with him?
Difficult. I wouldn't say today as the person I am today. I know that that's not love. Yeah. You know, it's at the time.
Yeah, of course.
I saw him as, in a sense, a father figure.
But what do you mean he groomed you? Can you explain what you mean? And what was it about him that attracted you to him?
And how did you meet him? Where did he pop up? Was he on the scene of partying or house parties or was he in the drug?
So no, I just remember, you know, to be honest, I remember meeting him, I think I was just simply walking, going for a walk somewhere and he approached me.
Mm-hmm. And so he was, what, 30 or something? Or?
Yeah, I mean, he would have been, you know, at least 15 years older than me. And so, like I said, I think, you know, it's at the time, it's, you know, it's difficult. A lot of people that have been through, you know, abuse or have been groomed, it's difficult for people to understand how it really starts.
So you were completely sucked in by him.
Yeah,
and
100%.
The grooming started. And what does grooming involve?
What does it even mean?
I mean, so, you know, making somebody feel very special and making them feel like, you know, that, you know, he made me feel as though I was at times, you know, almost helping him by being in his life, you know. And I'm naturally, innately a carer. I was raised in you know, with having to look after my father, etc. So for me to feel like a man wanted me to care and look after him, in a sense, was me repeating the patterns of what I'd done with my father anyway. Mm-hmm. And so he made me feel very special, you know, at first.
And safe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so,
did it take a long time for you to feel like that? Or was he very good at what he was doing?
Yeah, I think so, definitely, you know.
And you were very vulnerable at this point.
Yeah. Exactly. And unfortunately, there are people out there that prey on people that are, you know, that are vulnerable.
Mm. Can I just clarify? He was your friend. He wasn't your boyfriend, he was your friend.
Well, at first, exactly.
And you trusted him because he was your friend.
Exactly.
And that was what you thought it was.
Exactly.
So you were entering into a very safe friendship with a man who was like a father figure to you.
Yeah.
And you were giving something back to him by caring. And it made you just feel a little bit more whole and it was filling
a void. Yeah, exactly. Basically, it was filling
a
void.
And then he abused that and took it to another level. And we don't have to go into detail about what happened if you don't want to.
Yeah.
But you were in a very, very vulnerable, dangerous, exposed position in your life at the age of 18. And did you tell your mother?
No. So, I mean, I was 17 at the time. And no, you know, it quickly turned into a situation where, you know, I was beaten up and I was raped. And that went on for quite a long time, you know. And and so, no, I didn't, because I was, you know, I was too frightened, you know, because of the threats that were told to me if I said something. So
I mean, it's just beyond incredible how somebody can actually take that level of abuse from seeing that you're vulnerable and seeing that you're in pain and you have a void and turning it into something so disgusting and violent and just horrendous. You poor thing.
Did your mother ever have suspicions that there was something not quite right?
But at that time, I was kind of a little bit, I was being quite rebellious anyway. You know, I'd lost my father. Yeah. I was, you know, drinking. I was using,
etc. And I guess at that age, you think you can handle it
exactly,
in a way.
Exactly.
I'm a big girl. I know what I'm doing. I've been through everything. I can do this.
100%.
But when did you realise that you couldn't?
I mean, you know, relatively early on, I, you know, after some of the situations, I was fully aware that what I was in was an extremely, you know, dangerous situation. Mm. But at that stage, there is, you know, there's the fear of leaving because of what might happen to you or to your family. There's fear.
And that was a threat, was it?
What would exactly, to your family? Exactly. So there was the fear of saying something, and also, in a very strange way, but there is a level of codependency there.
Yeah.
So there's that fear of, you know,
he's broken you,
exactly. There's that fear of, who am I without this situation?
Oh my gosh, what a horrendous, horrendous situation to be in. And how on earth did you get out?
And how long were you actually with him for?
So this went on for about 3 months. And then we, at the time, decided that, you know, the safest and the best thing to do was for me to leave the area because, you know, we were all really too afraid to call the police at the time.
So this was telling your mother and your mother
exactly.
giving you the advice. So
yeah, eventually, well, it was with a few of us. We didn't make that decision, not just my mother,
Okay, so you finally have the courage to tell your mother, you know you've got a problem, this guy is dangerous.
Yeah, exactly.
And the only option is to leave the area. Why couldn't you tell the police?
Well, I think we were all too afraid, you know?
I mean, I'm really hoping... I totally get that as well. I'm just hoping that today we're so much more aware of these things that people hopefully have the courage... to know that there's a support system out there, that they don't have to be quite so terrified.
Obviously, it's hard.
No, it's true.
But I do understand when the fear is... The fear is just so great. Yeah, no, I really understand that, because how much can you be protected at the end of the day? And no, I really, really understand that. Wow. So you simply decided to leave Hackney?
Exactly, yeah. And so... that's what I did. And so I had an amazing friend at the time. So I stayed in three different places. I went and stayed with my grandparents, and then I went and stayed with... But my mum...
And what happened to the horrendous man?
So at that time, you know, nothing.
You disappeared.
I disappeared.
He didn't find you.
No.
And you didn't hear another word from him?
No. So while I was there, I was while I was living in South London, I would travel down. And I think this is what kept me going, actually. You know, my mum really believes in the value of education and how that can, you know, change our lives, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would travel down to sixth form while in hiding in the hope to get into Bristol University. And I got a place at Bristol University, which was, I mean, quite remarkable. But, you know, at the time, I didn't have any feeling to what was happening or what had happened to me. You know, I just continued on.
You're just in complete post-traumatic shock.
Yeah, exactly that.
And just completely disconnected, because these very awful traumatic experiences, they can very often completely disattach us.
Mm-hmm.
Because there comes a point when the pain is so big that you just, you have to cut it off because you just can't deal with it. No, I really relate to that in so many ways. I really relate to that.
Yeah.
But what a lifeline. So you've got Bristol. So, and that's incredible.
Yes.
I mean, it's just unbelievable that you managed to get there considering the trauma that you've been through. So you took the place.
So I took the place and I studied sociology and social policy.
Amazing.
Yes. And it was, I mean, it was a difficult time because in my first year of university, so basically, we decided that, you know, it was best that I left the area, and eventually I moved back home. And this is when I bumped into, you know, the person. But anyway, prior to that, I moved back for a little while, and I met a wonderful young man who, a good young man. And we became, you know, we were just, I mean, I really loved him. And he was very supportive throughout that stage. And, you know, telling somebody, you know, a young male what you've been through is very difficult. And, and he was extremely supportive because I was still very scared.
Terrifying for you to allow somebody into
exactly,
that place in your
exactly,
heart.
Exactly. Yeah. And so he was just such a remarkable young man. And like I was saying before, you know, I grew up in quite a rough area. Mm. So unfortunately, he was murdered. And for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know, which was extremely, extremely difficult to deal
with. I mean, you've been on such a journey. We're going to take 2 minutes.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Right, okay, deep breaths all around.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I feel as if you have spirits of other women that must also be in you that have helped to carry you through this time. Because, I mean, first of all, your groomer, and then your big love, after having lost your father and gone through having to take care of him from a very early age, it's a lot for one person.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I mean, my mother was incredible in a way that she would always read us books from women that had been, you know, before us. So people like, you know, she would teach us about the history, and people like even Maya Angelou and some of her poems. And she has an incredible, you know, poem or statement that she makes that, you know, you will face many defeats in life, but never let yourself be defeated. Mm. And I always knew, and there was always something within me that knew that there was much more to life than what I was being brought, you know. Mm.
And you know what, Gracie? They do say that when you come out on the other side, you've been chosen. You are one of the chosen ones. One of the chosen ones that has had to experience such extreme pain on so many different levels, because they knew you were strong enough not only to survive and cope, but actually to rise even higher and live your life now helping others in the way that you do. So sometimes what can be the greatest tragedy becomes a gift, because you can heal yourself when you start helping to heal others.
Yeah, so true.
And it's quite a big thing to be one of the chosen ones. And the chosen ones, by this I mean, and to all of you out there who have had extraordinarily painful experiences, and some have had numerous of them, and as painful as it is, you've got to realize that you've been chosen, because he knows or she knows that you not only can survive, but you can do much more than that, and you can give so much hope to so many other people. And it's when it's really painful, it's very difficult to see it as a gift. But I know that the many challenges that I've had in my life at the time, I couldn't see it as anything. There was nothing positive in it. It just was something that made my wounds bleed and ooze even more. But, you know, today I'm really able to look back on some of those things and really say, what a gift. What a gift to have been allowed to experience it and be given the strength to not only get through it, but also heal it and come out on the other side and be in a position where you can actually be a support and help to others.
Exactly. So true.
So, and that's where you are now in your life, right?
So how, did you manage to return to Bristol?
I did finish my degree. I remember calling my lecturer at the time and just saying, you know, I won't be coming back, you know, because I'm have to, you know, obviously go to my boyfriend's funeral. And they were very supportive, and then, you know, I went back and I got on with it. And you know, I'd become so it had become my normality to numb the pain. So I was still living in a place of complete distance from my emotions in order to survive, I think.
And still drinking?
I was still drinking. Yeah. And, you know, but I think the brain is such a powerful thing, you know, that when you suffer so many traumas and in such a short space of time, the brain kind of cuts off in a way to help you survive. Because if you were to feel the intensity of all of those emotions, you are, you know, possibly I wouldn't be here today. Yeah. And so there had to be a disconnect in order for me to continue, you know, to kind of soldier on in a sense. And luckily I did survive that. And you know, and one of the biggest things today that has actually enabled me to live the life that I'm now living is from speaking my truth. And yeah. And that was when I made a conscious decision to take the person to court who had harmed me.
Gosh, that's brave.
That is so brave. Yeah. But can I ask you a question? That when you made that decision, did you then also find that, because that obviously, to make that decision is feeling your feelings.
Yeah, exactly.
So how, when you were so disattached because you kept numbing, what was it that not made you break down? Because you actually had a breakthrough.
Yeah.
And I think the day that you decide that you're going to go on your healing journey and you're going to reattach to your heart mm-hmm. and your spirit and your soul and all of your feelings, and I think it's the bravest, most amazing thing when you decide to go on that healing journey. Can you tell us a little bit about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so it was, you know, leading up to the court case, I had to stop working, you know, I was under a lot of pressure. And it was then really that I like to call it an awakening, but I had a breakdown, you know, and there's a saying that God can't give you whatever you believe in, your higher power can't give you anything if your hands are too full. And so everything literally had to be stripped away. And that happened. I lost my job, but you know, I lost my friends and I was left sitting by myself. And I, you know, I think discomfort is a very important thing because it really tells us, you know, whether we want to stay in what we're in or whether we need to really make a change. And I was so uncomfortable with living my life the way that I was. It didn't feel right anymore that I was treating myself in this way, you know? And so the more time I had by myself, I started to get more of an understanding of what it was that I really wanted from life. And that was a kind of gradual process, you know? And I just think it's extremely important. A lot of us are so afraid to stop, so afraid to spend time with ourselves and really understand who we are as individuals. What do we want from the world? And those are they're big questions, but those questions can only really fully be answered when you actually really go back to the past and deal with your past.
Did you have any therapy or anything to help?
So my mum's always been a huge advocate for that from quite a young age after we lost our father, that we should have therapy.
Your mum sounds like one hell of an amazing woman. How extraordinary. Education, good work ethic, and getting help.
Yes.
I mean, I love that. What a healthy, balanced, extraordinary woman. No wonder you've turned into such an amazing Grace.
And, you know, not just my mother. My mother is incredible. And I also had my incredible sister, Sula, who, you know, was a huge part of that journey, you know. And we're extremely close today. And she definitely was one of my angels along the way, you know, and who stood up for me so bravely and strongly in court and testified and everything.
Incredible. Family is everything, basically.
Yeah, and I love that you call her an angel because, you see, that...
I so believe in angels.
And I also just think that... You know, I've said this as well so many times before, is when you're going through something really tough, you know, some friends are like family, but your family are really the people who
exactly.
always have your back, hopefully,
exactly.
if you've got a good family and support around you. But really, it's important to lean on them sometimes
yeah.
and allow them to
yeah.
help you and guide you and support you. Because you can't do everything all on your own all the time.
No, exactly. Yeah. And so the court case was, you know, I mean, it was a very difficult process. But prior to that, I hadn't spoken about what had happened to me for 10 years. So the first time I'd ever mentioned it was with a police officer.
Gosh.
And so that was, you know, I mean, it just rocked my world, really.
Yeah. But amazing also that you didn't get sick, Grace, because I think holding on to such trauma without speaking to anybody about it, you know, it's like carrying the weight of the entire world on your shoulders in such a painful way. And I think often, you know, the things that, and I say this to my children, you know, it's so important to speak up of everything, speak of your pain, speak your truth, always speak your truth. Because I do believe that what you keep on the inside that doesn't come out can actually make you sick. How were you able to remain in balance? Because somehow your body must have physically been in balance. And
no,
maybe it was
exactly.
because you saved yourself by somehow drowning yourself in mm-hmm. probably keeping busy and having a few too many cocktails now and again.
Yeah, I think so. And
And being blessed with a very physically strong body.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, you know. And
well, it sounds like you used the alcohol to deal with it.
Exactly, exactly.
Therapy, but then, so you finally had your awakening and you took this horrible man to court. Mm-hmm. And what was the outcome?
Yeah, and he was sentenced to 13 years in prison.
You are truly amazing.
Yeah,
seriously,
you know.
That is incredible that you went to that extent. And well done you. That is so remarkable. So remarkable.
Wow, so that means he's there now.
Yeah.
Well, thank God you've protected all those other girls that could have been potentially exposed to somebody like
him. Exactly. And I think the bigger picture is, you know, I knew when I was standing up in court that this was greater than me, you know, and it was and it was also about me, you know, being a voice for all the other women that came before me that weren't able to.
And were there others?
There were others. And so, you know, it's a victory, not just for myself.
Yeah.
How amazing, Grace. Has he made contact with you whilst he's been in prison?
Yeah,
has
he? Sorry.
No, and he wouldn't be allowed to. No, no.
Yeah.
No, there'd be absolutely no way.
Okay.
And yeah. How do you feel about his sentence coming to an end soon?
So still a long time because okay. it's only been about 4 years.
Oh my goodness. So this, of course, sorry, this happened 10 years later.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah, okay. Exactly.
Okay. Well. I'm happy for you that he's there, and well done you for going the whole way to do that, because that's incredibly brave, and standing in a courtroom looking at somebody who's done all those terrible things to you must have been excruciatingly painful and frightening.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, gosh.
I've got a question to ask you, because of course when you're so brave to actually stand up against someone who's caused you so much pain.
I mean, you know, I think you have to have faith, you know. I can't put my trust in a system, but you know, though this system has been incredible in helping me come to justice, my trust has to be in the love of myself. My trust has to be in the faith of my higher power to know that I am divinely guided and protected.
And
you know,
you haven't been broken.
No,
you
exactly,
could have been broken
exactly.
On so many occasions, and you're here.
Exactly,
and you're smiling.
Exactly,
and you're healthy, and you're happy,
exactly.
And you're whole again.
Yeah.
And no one can take that away.
Exactly.
From you. No one, no matter what they do to you, they can't break you.
Exactly.
And you know that now, which is an incredible gift
for you to really know of yourself.
I also think that that faith, having that faith, and I remember my wonderful therapist saying to me, in any situation where you feel scared, you have to put a navy blue velvet cloak around you of protection lined in gold, and you will be safe. If you believe that you will be safe, you will be safe.
Exactly, exactly.
So you are, obviously, you've achieved your voice, you found your bravery and your courage. You've managed to get this awful man put in prison for the foreseeable future. Then when you had done that, you must have felt amazing.
I did. I did feel amazing. But, you know, unfortunately, I was still in active addiction.
Right.
So, you know, and after...
Oh, gosh, how did you get through court in active addiction?
I mean, I don't know.
Wow.
Again, I think there's, you know, there's something greater that's always, always watching over you, you know? And so I was still in that pattern, you know, and that's not something you can change overnight, even though you may have,
because
ended
I guess
something.
Because it becomes part of your everyday life.
Exactly.
Taking it away would seem more unusual than keeping it.
Exactly. And so it was, you know, it was after that that in my mind, I believe the only reason why I was drinking was because of what I'd experienced, you know. And I believed that after the court case, I would stop drinking, I would stop using, you know, because this was the one thing that was really controlling and affecting my life. And that's when I realized that actually this was greater than me, that this addiction was much greater than anyone's situation. And so it was then that I made a conscious decision to take myself to rehab and get help.
Oh my gosh, that's another enormously brave move. So where did you go and how long did you go and how did you get through?
What
advice can you give to somebody feeling that they should take themselves?
I think that, you know, if you are... if you are, it's all about why we are drinking, you know, and if you are drinking when you feel extremely sad, or, you know, you feel better when you're going through a difficult situation once you have a drink, and you're starting to isolate yourself and you're starting to drink alone or use, you know, or use alone, then I think it's important that you find somebody that you can speak to. Mm. And actually, you know, addiction isn't the root of the issue. The root of the whatever's going on is much deeper, and that may stem from some form of trauma or something you've dealt with as a child. And so I think if you can find the strength within you to find somebody to speak to about maybe some of those experiences, you know, because addiction is a secondary illness, really.
Yeah. And I think also, don't you think that, you know, I heard you saying how from a very young age you were looking after your father, you know, and I think it's very important sometimes to bear in mind what is normal expectations of a child, and what does it actually mean to allow a child to be a child. And of course we all have to help around in the house, etc., but if your childhood is taken away from you, and probably on a very subconscious level, you know, it is quite traumatic that you weren't, that you couldn't just be a normal child, mm-hmm. like everyone else, that you had to kind of become a caring nurse,
yeah,
you know, a helper from a very, very young age. And I think that, you know, any kind of therapy, I think therapy full stop is absolutely mm-hmm. incredible. And I think that everybody has had, to lesser or greater degrees, you know, experiences throughout their life that I think are really, really important to talk about, you
exactly.
know, because a lot of these things can be the little trigger. Grain of, yeah.
Yeah, the trigger of something that might happen later on. So you were brave enough to take yourself to your rehab. And yeah. Where did you stay in London, or did you go?
So I went abroad, actually, for a month. Mm-hmm. And so that gave me the room, really. I mean, it was the first time I remember being in a group at rehab, and they asked us to share our stories. And it was the first time I really cried, you know, when I shared, you know, I've cried many times, but the first time that I cried when sharing what I'd experienced,
made
you know.
Lots of people in that room realise that their problems were very insignificant, yeah. to be honest.
You know, I don't,
you probably helped a lot of people
yeah.
in rehab with you at that
yeah,
time.
Possibly, yeah, possibly.
Yeah, or isn't it also when you hear, the first time you come into a room like that and you hear someone else's story and you think, oh my God, there are people who've experienced things that are equally big.
You know, the gift of facing your fear and admitting you've got a problem.
Exactly.
And facing it head on and going into an environment where people can really support you, who
yeah.
know what they're doing,
exactly.
who know how to help you, and knowing that it's not just you mm-hmm. with this problem, there's other people out there, and then you must be able to see that there's a path for coming out the other side.
100%.
And you know what I love? Someone told me recently that, you know, there are meetings for everything.
Definitely.
You know, whether you have lost someone, whether you have too much sex, whether you shop too much, alcohol, drugs, of course, all of that. But there are so many different meetings. And if you feel sad or alone and you do find yourself reaching out for one of these various addictions, you know, you can also go to these meetings and you can just sit there and listen.
Exactly. Yeah.
You don't
yeah.
ever have to say anything. Yeah. And I've heard from more people than one who's gone to various different meetings that, you know, it really gave them the courage to start their healing journey just by going a few times to some of these meetings and realizing, you know what, I'm not alone. And on top of that, there's hope. There's
yeah.
hope for me.
And there's something so powerful in it, in being able to identify, you know, and knowing that you're not the only one that's suffering, and that and that definitely helped me.
And the biggest thing is actually just realizing that there's a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
it's admitting that,
is that
there's
the
something
biggest
wrong.
Yeah. step you can possibly
yeah.
take in your healing. So you were there for a month.
So I was there for a month, and prior to that I'd came to the Prince's Trust.
Okay.
So when I stopped working, you know, I had to find a means to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. So I joined, fell back on my massage diploma, and I joined lots of different agencies. And
that
that's what I remember. You did your massage. And I remember thinking, my God, one day I would like to be lucky enough to have a massage by you.
Yeah. Yes, because I imagine you're a healer as well as a... Exactly. Yeah.
So I, you know, started building up my clients and I, you know, and I had an opportunity to go into working environments. And I thought, you know, there's really something here about bringing holistic services into the workplace to support people's and employees' mental and physical well-being. But I'd never set up a business before. So, you know, a friend of mine recommended the Prince's Trust. And so I went to the Prince's Trust with my idea. And, you know, it was at that point that I realised, you know, it is about responsibility and I have to start taking my life more seriously. And so that's when I then decided to go to rehab midway through my time in the trust.
And can I just ask you, when you decided with the support of the Prince's Trust to set up your own business, this was going to be a holistic business where you were going to, within your business, employ other men, women, maybe with a similar story in one way or another, who could also start healing through massage. Is that right? Is that what I remember rightly?
So so the company's called Work Spa, and really the core values are about, you know, for me, massage really did change my life. You know, it was shortly after my court case that, you know, when I started joining all these agencies and started massaging people, I started realizing that, you know, the huge benefits that massage can bring to people's lives.
And yours.
And to mine. And, yeah. And what massage did for me is it gave me room to learn how to calm my mind, how to you know, feel at peace with being within myself, and also just having more stillness. And so it was very meditative for me, actually, offering people treatments. And I could see the effects it had on people afterwards, you know, and it also gave room for people to share how, you know, what they were going through as well. And so it's a very beautiful, you know, beautiful thing to offer people. And so, you know, I really believe that if we could bring this into the workplace and just create more work-life balance, that it could really have a huge effect on individuals and, you know, naturally happy employees and more productive and happier companies. And so it's expanded from there, really, you know.
And how have the Prince's Trust helped you?
So the Prince's Trust have been amazing in offering, so they offer you a range of, so basically you go on the, I went on the Enterprise Programme, and which is, you do 4 days of training, so they teach about all the different aspects of business, and then you have about a year to complete your business plan, and so they want you to test trade effectively and, you know, and see if your business is going to be viable or not. And so then you go to panel and they have a look at your business plan and decide whether they're going to offer you a mentor or some funding. And I asked for a mentor because I believe wisdom is better than gold. And so I've got a wonderful mentor today called Chris Letcher, who we meet monthly. We talk about, you know, different business strategies, how we're going to move forward. And the Prince's Trust have really, they saw something in me that I didn't see. You know, if I, when I look back and think, you know, 2 years ago,
if you must see it now.
Now I do, of course. Yes, yeah. Good. And that's through the belief of other people, you know, and that's what's so powerful, you know, when, if you give somebody, if you believe in somebody, you know, you can really change their lives. And so the Prince's Trust have been incredible.
And so one thing that you mentioned when we were having a moment of a break, because we were all getting quite emotional, was your drinking anniversary.
Yeah, so I decided to it happened, you know, I decided to stop drinking, and it was the 19th, and it was exactly the same day that my boyfriend that passed away, it's his birthday, so today we both celebrate a birthday
so
together.
You've got to celebrate that gift that he gave you, that moment in your life,
exactly,
and your day of
exactly
taking the power back,
exactly
building your business,
exactly.
And I mean, it's just an incredible journey you've been on.
So we go all over the UK. So we the company's supporting HSBC, we sort of support them at their conferences and some of their offices across the UK, and we've just started a wellbeing program for the White Company, so we're offering them yoga and massage, and we've had such incredible feedback for how the employees are feeling.
I used to work with her.
She's wonderful.
Years ago, amazing.
So it's going really well.
Grace, this is incredible.
Thank you.
It really is amazing.
And so where are you living? And are you living alone now? And how's your mom doing? She must be so proud of you.
She is. And I won the awards for Ambassador of the Year, the regionals. And I found out from Fern Cotton, when I did a podcast with her, that I've also won the nationals. So I'm going to the London Palladium tomorrow.
Oh my gosh,
and I'm going to be awarded by Prince Charles.
Oh, yeah. What an achievement. I mean, it's incredible, really.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
Grace.
So my mum will be there and she is beaming with joy. Yeah, yes. She's so proud. I'm so sad. My sister works in an international school in South Korea, so unfortunately she can't come. But it will be my mum and my younger sister and my business mentor. So tomorrow is going to be a big day.
Tomorrow,
so it's very exciting. Tomorrow day. It's going to start in the daytime.
What are you wearing?
I've got, phase eight. I went to their shop the other day and they gave me a dress and it's beautiful.
Wow.
It's really stunning. So I'm really excited.
So this afternoon is rehearsals for you.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, yes.
And have you got to give a little speech?
Actually, I can relax a little bit, which is quite nice.
Good.
So I'll just go and collect my award. Okay. But there's going to be a video about my life that they filmed at my house.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Grace, I'm so happy for you.
So I live in East London still. Mm. And
that's very interesting that you
but not
to
close
remain.
To where
okay.
Yeah.
But you love East London.
I love it. It's such a diverse community and I really love where I live. So yeah.
And you've got the same friends, new friends,
new friends. Think, you know, when you are changing and making changes in your life, not everybody can come on the journey with you, and that's okay, and that's something that I found difficult,
I
but
totally
I've had to learn
agree with you, and
acceptance
I think life
of
can
that.
Sometimes be about bless you.
Bless you.
Life can sometimes be about chapters.
Exactly.
And when you close one chapter and open another, sometimes you have to go into that chapter with different people.
100%.
And they can come back into your life through the chapters.
Exactly.
But I really believe that once you've got out of something that's been difficult, a lot of the people that would have been in that moment with you, you kind of need to move away
100%,
from a little bit.
100%. Yeah. You know, it's so true.
And I think the people around you really help make you the success that you become.
Yeah, and you are a reflection of your, you know, the people
that
you
have
around you.
Show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are, like my dad always said.
Yeah, so true. So true.
And what about love, Grace? What about love? Because you look
I'm in love with my business, you know, at the moment.
But you look, so you're just surrounded by light and love. It's quite incredible.
Thank you. You know what? I'm in love with myself at the moment, which is a wonderful thing.
What a wonderful
I never
thing
thought
to
I'd
be.
Get there.
What a wonderful thing to be.
And your business, which is also an amazing thing, because at the end of the day, if you can build something on your own, become self-sufficient, become independent, then you'll never allow a man to overshadow anything you're doing, and you can find an equal partner to bounce you, you know, to only enhance your life, never take anything away from it or add too much to overshadow you. And I think that's such an important lesson for anybody out there is, you know, once you've done it on your own, you can survive and you can get through, but you've done more than survive. You've come out the other side and you are on fire and you're winning awards and you've built your successful business. And it is such an inspiration, an incredible journey. And really my heart goes out to everything you've had to endure
thank
in
you.
Your life, but it's made you who you are.
Exactly.
And that is truly lovely on the inside and the outside.
Thank you.
And it's been such an enormous pleasure having
you
share with us. We are so thankful for you because it's a tough journey and it must be tough to share.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you are the complete image to me of this survivor that turned into a superwoman. I don't know if you guys recently have seen everything going on with a new only female super only female superhero movie, the new Marvel movie.
Oh, no.
Which is apparently only made by women.
Wow.
Directed by women.
Incredible.
With women actors, which I think is really incredible.
Really incredible.
And Reese Witherspoon, who you know is a real stand-up for everything to empower women. And I think the way you've survived, and there is not even an ounce of victim.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was one time in my life when I literally was licking the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And when I thought, you know what? Right now, I do relate to people who jump out of windows because there are times in your life when the pain can be so intense that you actually don't know what to do. And I remember my oldest girlfriend came to me at that time in my life and said to me, you're not a victim. you're not a victim. And I was kind of like looking at her thinking, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden I was like, no, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I am not a victim. Mm-hmm. And I think with your story, Grace, and what you've been through and the way you have healed and the way that you've turned your life around with that, there's no anger, there's no bitterness. Quite on the contrary, you've been able to see and do everything in such a beautiful and positive and amazing way. Hats off to you.
Oh, thank
and
you.
And so well done. And you deserve everything. And may your light shine so brightly for so many decades and centuries. Because now, you know, we can almost choose how old we want to become if we take care of ourselves mentally and physically.
Exactly.
And can I please book a massage?
Of course you can.
Congratulations on your amazing achievement.
Thank you so
tomorrow,
much.
And good luck. I hope you don't get too nervous going out there. I'm sure you don't get nervous at all because of everything you've had to endure already. But we wish you all the best and we hope to see you again and hear more of your business development if you ever want to come back and talk to us about
Thank
how it's
you.
Going. And well done, the Prince's Trust as well. What an amazing scheme and program to involve people in. And we just wish everybody a very happy day. I feel very inspired by you and thankful for all I have and protective over my children.
Yeah.
And I want to be involved in every aspect of their life. That's how it makes me feel.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks,
Grace.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.